Welcome to the Inside CCW Safe Podcast with founders Stan Campbell and Mike Darter. If you're forced to fight the battle for your life, CCW Safe will fight the battle for your future.
All right, welcome back to the Inside CCW Safe Podcast. I'm Mike Darter in Oklahoma City with Stan Campbell.
In Los Angeles.
Lovely. What's the weather report, man? Come on.
Okay, it is beautiful again today. There were fires in the mountains, but I'm a little distance away from there, so I'm good.
Nice. Yeah, I'm headed to Jackson Hole tomorrow, and they've had some fires up there as well. So it's pretty smoky. So
be careful out there.
Some of the people who don't know, one thing about me, I have done photography for most of my life, and I have always done wildlife and outdoor nature photography. And so a couple times a year, I have a good friend of mine who is a wildlife photographer. He's an award-winning photographer from BBC and Nat Geo, and he travels all over the world, Kenya, Rwanda. He's actually in South America, in Honduras right now, doing some diving.
Oh, that's awesome.
Doing underwater photography, but his name is Aaron Bagenstos, aaronstours.com. And so I help him, I co-lead tours with him in Tetons and Yellowstone every year, sometimes every once in a while in different locations, Alaska, Canada. But that is one of my passions personally that I have. I have a website, jmdarter.com, that you can go and you kind of see some of my work.
It's some beautiful work, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I love it.
Mike actually owes me, it'd be perfect in my new place too. You owe me the snowy owl about to get the mouse. I want that.
Yeah. And the
Martin Luther King.
Martin Luther King, yep, from D.C.
Mike has an amazing eye for art and photography, and he has some great work. You guys make sure you go check out his website and look at his work. Both of us actually come from an art background. I went to the School of the Arts in North New Jersey, went to Arts High School for fine arts. I never really got deep into photography, but hopefully, you know, once we slow down a little bit and CCW Safe, I'll be able to take some trips with Mike.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah. And we went to Yosemite last year together.
It was cold.
It was cold. And the Horsetail Falls did not show up. So no. Maybe this next year I'm going to try to make it out there. I'm actually supposed to lead a tour in Yellowstone in February, which is going to be kind of cool. I never have led a winter tour. I've always done in the spring, I've done baby animal tour where we go out and find the animals, and then fall color and wildlife tour. Wow. And we generally take like six photographers out, three each, and we take them out and get them close to the animals, and then also kind of help them with their cameras. Most of them don't need the help. Some do. But anyways, yeah, check it out. Check out my Instagram, JM Darter, and let me know what you think. So,
yes, sir.
Today, what's that?
I was about to say, what are we talking about today?
Today, we're going to be talking about the finishing up the core values. Now, we did the core values a couple weeks ago, and then I was in LA last week, had a great time with Stan in LA. We got a great interview done with George Holt. That will have been on last week. And then we're going to this week follow up with the core values of experience and leadership. And then next week we'll have one on with either Don West, kind of his history, or another one we did when I was in LA with Bob O'Connor, who is the chief investigator over the Zimmerman case. He ended up leaving Sanford, and he's now with the state. So we got some good stuff done, and Cher stayed in my hotel, Stan.
That's right. She sure did. Michael got a sighting of Cher, the actress singer,
and Luis Guzman.
That's right.
I love that guy. He's awesome.
He's awesome. He's awesome as well.
He is awesome. They were both very nice people. I didn't like talk to him or anything, but I about ran into Luis and the.
They seem like really nice elevator. People, Michael.
Hey, you know, they seem like it. That's one thing that police officers, you will commonly hear them say, they very rarely will commit to, he's a nice guy, because you just never know.
You just never know. You got to keep that
open. Something's going to come out. Yeah, you got to keep that open.
Keep that open.
So talking about law enforcement, let's finish up this. Our core values, we talked about last time, talked about commitment, dedication, and caring, and those three really go together for us. Mm-hmm. And they really intertwine and are hard to separate, based on our past, our careers, and so forth. And if you haven't listened to that, you can go back and listen to that. Now, this podcast is going to be a lot higher quality. When I was in LA, we got Stan set up with the studio, so from now on, we'll have a little bit better quality for you guys.
That's right. It is the real deal now. Now you guys can hear me.
The real deal. And so let's go with leadership and experience. And these were two, like, again, just to recap, our core values were created. We did a study or exercise with our entire group, with all our employees, our founders, and our some of our...
other staff.
Larry and
our support staff, our ambassadors.
Yeah. So, and we developed these core values off of what everybody was. So it wasn't just, you know, me as the co-founder and CEO coming out and saying these are our core values. We really wanted to establish a culture here at CCWSA for future, you know, employees, for even for our members. So, and experience and leadership really kind of go together and are also kind of intertwined based on our past.
Correct.
And not only our past, but the past of the people who we have as our panel advisors, like Larry Vickers, Alexis Artwall. I think we knew going early in when we decided to do this that the experience that we had was higher than what we saw out there. And I don't want to sound like I don't want to sound braggish or cocky by saying that, but just based on the experience that we had.
You know, I actually had a member call yesterday, Mike, and he really wanted me to break it down in simple terms for him. And so what I said to him was, I said, so imagine you need your sink fixed, your kitchen sink fixed. And it's a difference between a carpenter knocking on the door and a plumber. CCW mm-hmm. Safe, this is how we present ourselves with, you know, working crime scenes and dealing with catastrophic cases. I mean, we've lived it. Some of the other competitors, they've only written about it. They have great magazines. They write about people like us. Once again, not to sound, you know, cocky, but we are those who've lived what you're going to go through. We've walked in your shoes. And it's better to have somebody there that's not just studied in it. You know, you can study shootings. But if you haven't been in any, situations in which you have to de-escalate yourself or you have to pull the trigger, you know, it puts you at a disadvantage. And that's all it is that we have a bigger advantage in this industry because we're the only ones that are really designed, the way that we are. And that is a for-profit organization, you know, not to walk away from the nonprofits because there is mm-hmm. there is one group that has a great group of guys that also come from law enforcement. We're just designed a little bit different, and we actually handle much more than they would. So, that's really the biggest difference.
Yeah, and I was going to say, Masad Ayub is one of the ones in the space that is probably one of the ones with you know, a lot of experience in courtroom testimony.
Yes.
And expert witness form. But there really isn't a whole, you know, the majority of the space are insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big difference from that. So,
and then really, you know, there's also a big difference in, you know, the experience of just a group that come from criminal defense attorneys, because there are some groups like that are just, you know, made up of attorneys, and they contract other attorneys across the nation, and they're kind of stuck to that contract, which is also, you know, somewhat of a flaw of a disadvantage, because once that money runs out, what they're contracted for, that attorney, that contracted attorney, doesn't have any incentive to keep moving forward with his own money from his firm, you know, so, you know, it falls back on the customer again.
Right.
So, I mean, it really is important, you know, when we came up and, you know, Mike's, you know, brainchild, and, you know, myself and Kyle helped him to, you know, turn it into what is CCW Safe today. It was important for us to bring back our experience in law enforcement to make it really work and really match what citizens need.
Yeah, and it's, you brought up the attorneys. You know, each component of this system that most companies have, the one that we really created, each component has a very important part. The critical response, that homicide detective who is going to be responding, has a critical part in the overall process, and that is working with that member and the member's family, and working with the National Trial Counsel, Don West, working with the attorneys that he ends up submitting to our member, the attorneys that our members, you know, end up hiring, working with the bail bondsman to make sure we get our member out if they are arrested. You know, that's a critical part that critical response coordinator handles. Then the attorneys have, you know, they are probably the most critical component in this, because they're the ones that are really leading the charge and taking all the information and putting the case together. Now, the one thing, and you brought up, the CCW Safe expertise is more in law, on the law enforcement side and the investigative side, in the understanding the protocols and the policies and procedures that departments have when dealing with these types of investigations. That is another huge component. And you cannot have a good system without all those working together, because the attorney, no matter how much of a badass attorney you have, they are working off of the product of the investigators.
That's correct.
And they are working with the process of the critical response coordinator, and they're working off of the process also of the experts that are eventually going to be brought in.
Absolutely.
So all of these have components. So you can't have the way I see it, and the way we saw it early on, is you can't just have one badass component.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to have a really good understanding of how these shootings are going to be investigated, both on the police department level or the sheriff's department level or the, you know, federal agency level, but then also on the district attorney's level.
Yes.
You have to have all that understanding. And there are a lot of good, I mean, I know a lot of good criminal defense attorneys who are not, you know, they're not that versed in the investigative policy procedure part, just like the investigators are not versed in the legal part.
Correct.
So you have to have all those components, and I think that's one of the things that makes that, like how you said, it gives us the advantage.
Correct.
When it comes to experience.
Absolutely.
Because we have people who fully understand every component of that.
Yeah, and then, you know, when you think about, I'm just looking back at the Stephen Maddox case, you know, I mean, we were tested and we proved our theory, and, you know, because everyone else is working off a theory. So we were actually tested in the worst case scenario. And in doing so, we saw that all of those components were absolutely necessary to be at the same level of importance. Just like you said, you know, in his case, if we didn't have the best expert witness to tear apart the state's case, if we didn't have the best investigators to actually do an investigation, which law enforcement failed to do, you know, if we didn't have the homicide guys going out there and working with Stephen Maddox and his family. And also being there to be able to review the case, to give them strategy. You know, we also have an advantage of, you know, our critical response coordinator, you know, spending 10 years as a investigator for the prosecutor's office as well. So he has an insight there as well, how they think. And then, of course, Don West, you know, and, you know, being able to choose the right attorneys for the right for the job, and also to be there to help them out, you know, to the point where they were even calling him, although they were amazing attorneys and they worked, you know, a lot of shooting cases, but, you know, they ended up calling him Coach John, I mean, Don at the end of the case. I mean, it was just amazing. But you could even go back to something as simple as the call for service. You know, a lot of people talk about, you know, and I really want to choose my own attorney. And there's some pros and cons to that. You know, in this particular case, Stephen was in a place that he was not familiar. He wasn't near his home. So it wasn't a home attorney that he would use. He didn't know who to call. And, you know, we had Don West there to choose the right attorney, because a lot of times, you know, it's kind of like picking a doctor. You know, do you really know who the right one is? You know, because they don't really put reviews on them on Yelp. You know?
Yeah. And one of the big things with Don even was on the attorney. He had an attorney that he thought would have been great for this case. It was out of Raleigh.
Yes.
But that attorney was on vacation in Aruba for 2 weeks. So
that's right.
Are we going to put off, you know, if you already have your attorney pre-picked and they just had gallbladder surgery, or they're out of the country for a week on vacation, do you want to sit in jail for a week until they get back?
Absolutely not.
That's just not the right you know, we tell people, if you have an attorney, yes, submit their name. We would like to vet them, have Don West go ahead and vet an approval process to where we could use them. But even if that were the case, if they're out of town or they're on another, they have another trial going on, you know, that's not something sitting in jail for on a $500,000 murder one charge is not something you want to just, well, I'll just wait till they get done. Until they're free to come help me.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to wait in jail.
So, and leadership kind of goes, I think leadership goes with that as well. I mean, leadership, you know, and the biggest thing I think about leadership that I see is not us, but our panel advisors, you know, being able to be able to have panel advisors such as Larry Vickers. I mean, if you don't know who Larry Vickers is and you're in the gun world or you're, you know, a concealed carry, you really need to do some research and find out who he is. Alexis Artwall, one of the top police psychologists, you know, look up her book. That really shows, I think, the leadership that we have with CCW Safe is not, I mean, you know, CCW Safe, I do feel like we are a leader in this industry, but
absolutely,
I think it really rests on the people who we have been able to partner with and have panel as panel advisors or, you know, that we work with.
Well, I'm going to piggyback you, but just change it up just a little bit, Michael. You know, I want to talk about our staff real quick, and, you know, we're really careful about who we hire. You know, for one, we were cops, and, you know, we don't trust everyone, especially with our baby, which is CCW Safe. You know, we hire leaders. You know, I mean, it's important. You know, we come from a system in which, you know, as police officers, sometimes the boss is not there and you have to step up into a different position. You know, it's that's the beauty of what we have here with CCW Safe. You know, any one of us, you know, because of our experience, we can step into the critical response coordinator's position. You know, we've all had the training. We've all, you know, worked thousands of crime scenes and hundreds of shootings. Some of us have been involved in shootings, and some of us taken lives. Some of us have been, you know, sued in federal court, myself included. And, you know, we understand, you know, all sides of the crime scene tape from working both sides, and also working, you know, being on both sides of the witness stand, you know, either as, you know, a defendant or, you know, as an officer. And, you know, and of course, being found not at fault for both of us. But, you know, the thing about it, you know, we have to remember that, you know, it's important for, you know, the way that we present our product. You know, we talked in a podcast before about, you know, us treating, you know, our members like family. You know, I mean, we are a multi-million dollar business, but we still operate like a mom and pop shop a little bit. And what I mean by that is, and we talk about when we talk about the care for, the dedication for our members, and how we step in and we just actually, you know, we pretty much adopt you like we would if you were a policeman involved in a shooting.
Yeah, I just wanted to read real quick basically our definitions. Experience, simply put, constant learning. Learning never stops. It's the basis of all experience, and due to our previous commitment of service, CCW Safe has experience needed to assist you in the most difficult, stressful time of your life. And leadership, our definition, is be part of the solution. We're very fortunate to have worked under great leaders during our careers. Law enforcement can be a very dynamic and dangerous environment, constantly changing, and seeing leaders work in such chaos can be very educational and can help develop true leadership. And those are our definitions. And I think one of the other things I think that really makes us stand out in terms of leadership in this space is really kind of the steps that we have taken in developing what we currently have, you know, and really talking about the captive.
Oh, but, yeah, yeah.
You know, developing this in a way to where we knew right off we didn't want to be an insurance. We didn't want to have to operate under the same, you know, guidelines as an insurance company, regulations. All that does is bring a service that is subpar to what we wanted to do, which was more similar to like a police union or FOP or a PBA. And then, you know, developing that the way we did has really saved us long term. And now that we recognized early on that a captive would benefit us so much if we were able to do our own captive insurance company, and then got that completed. That took a whole year to complete right there. And now you're seeing a lot of things play out in the firearms industry world today that is having a huge impact.
Absolutely.
You know, the fact that, you know, back earlier this year, they, Citibank and J.P. Morgan came out saying, you know, hey, financial institutions, banking, credit card processing, insurance really needs to rethink its relationship with firearms, not in a good way for us or anybody in the firearms industry. And basically said, in fact, I think the comptroller for New York said he believed that firearms should be treated as gambling and porn.
Wow.
And, you know, that started in early, and it really started, the idea of that started before 2018, but started early 2018. Then you moved, you roll up to April, May, or March through May, when New York started really coming out against the NRA, and then Lochton got hit with a $7 million settlement, and then, you know, they kind of kicked New York or NRA out of New York because of the insurance
element,
you know, illegal insurance element. And then now they're stepping up and asking other states to follow. And,
yeah,
and
California actually just jumped. Yeah.
California just did it. And that's what I said early on. I said, you know, months ago, I said, man, I guarantee you I think California, Illinois, maybe Ohio are probably going to follow, maybe some other states,
yes.
which, you know, we're the only ones right now who can legally operate in those states, and which is huge for our members, because the others, they're out. And the way that we have structured and kind of our foresight in seeing what, you know, what really needed to be done, you know, which was a police union model, something similar to a police union, FOP or a PBA, having that experience of knowing how they operate and then seeing to be able to come in, that's the experience part, and then the leadership part of being able to come in and actually put it together as a working model. I mean, I think that just really demonstrates a lot of differences between us and others. And like I said, we're not, you know, we're not, I'm not saying that, you know, all the other companies are worthless. They all do. I honestly believe they're all going to do what they say they're going to do.
Absolutely.
It's just that we're structured to handle, like you said, catastrophic. And some of these are, you know, structured more to handle, you know, smaller arrests if you're arrested with a firearm, mm-hmm. you know, not during a critical incident, but we're talking about catastrophic, you know, $500,000 plus cases. And, you know, that's what we've seen. And we're really pleased to be working on some future things that we hope to be able to talk about soon that we're going to be rolling out, you know, expanding that.
Absolutely. And you know, and again, I mean, we only mentioned the NRA is because it is in the news. And, you know, we are supporters of what the NRA does for, you know, Second Amendment. Excuse me. I don't know where I was going with that. But the Second Amendment. And, you know, I mean, they are the champions in that space. Mm-hmm. It's just that, you know, when they stepped into, you know, our world, you know, they should have kind of taken a little bit longer to study, you know, who was out there, and kind of, you know, they could have created something like CCW Safe and done really mm-hmm. well. But they started off, you know, even as, you know, political charged as they are as a group, and knowing that they had the, you know, the crosshairs on them, you know, they stepped out there, you know, with a product that wasn't shielded from anti-gun attacks, anti-gunners attacks. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of the experts across the nation that talk about, you know, that write books on the subject of, you know, concealed carry and gun laws, you know, they'll tell you that, you know, just like Andrew Branca, you know, he spoke about in his one of his podcasts that if you are not self-insured, you're not ready.
Yeah.
And all the rest of these companies, no matter, you know, what, you know, we're the only ones that are self-insured through our captive insurance company, and we are shielded. So, I mean, it absolutely gives us an advantage. So we're really happy to be about that.
Yeah, and I firmly believe this is the new gun control. And I think this is what the left is seeing as a win. You know, I think they finally realized that they're not going to be able to take away people's guns in the United States.
Correct.
But if they can put everybody out of business who makes guns and makes ammunition and makes accessories, then they win.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what we're seeing right now. And it's sad that, you know, we have to have the NRA for our Second Amendment freedoms and rights. That is the organization that's going to lead that. And it's sad that now they have found this way to you know, attack not only the NRA, but that whole kind of component of this industry,
mm-hmm.
With insurance, with credit card processors, and with banking.
Yes.
And, you know, we saw it firsthand back in, I think, 2015, and other companies now are seeing it to where, you know, if you take away credit card processing from a online retail gun shop, I mean, it could be over pretty quick. Mm-hmm. We're seeing, you know, some of the, a couple of the ammunition manufacturers
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
going out. And I think that has more to do probably with the fact that the people who are running those companies are at such a, they don't understand anymore what the business that they're in. I think they know more about Coca-Cola than they do about firearms or ammunition. And I'm serious. I mean, they just, yeah. You know, they get people on the boards who don't know what they're doing in that space. They may be great in other industries, but it, you know, may have something to do with that as well with this attack. And I really do honestly believe that this is a new attack. And, you know, I don't think that it's going to play out as to the extreme that, you know, everything's going to be put out of business. But I do think it's going to cause a lot of damage to the firearms industry for some time if it's not addressed. So.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And I don't know if you remember this. It was just, just before CarryGuard came out, or it was just right after, you know, because at first they were endorsing Second Call Defense as their mm-hmm. product. It was about a year, and, you know, they did that until they got CarryGuard ready. But just in the fall of 2017 is actually when they did the test run on the attack, and that was the attack on Second Call Defense. And it took them out for about 4 months. And then that was their dry run. And as soon as they got that done, you know, they started moving toward CarryGuard as an attack. And it was a successful attack. And, you know, they too had some difficulties, and they had to, I think their members went without coverage for about 2 to 3 months as well, until they found a backup system. And it was also locked in as well. So, yeah. It's real. And just like you said, I mean, this is the new gun control, is to go after these entities. And, the banking, you know, next is going to be marketing. I'm sure, you know, we have to keep our eyes on Facebook and some of the others, because there's only a couple of companies that own Google Google and Facebook. They own several companies under there that we market. So we have got to keep our eyes on all these different places. And, you know, I mean, the gun industry is under attack, and we have to be ready. And that's why we're forward thinking, you know, back to leadership. Mm-hmm. Back to leadership. You know, it's so important, you know, in the way that we do business. I mean, we're not going to just sit back and just, you know, be fat and happy. You know, we're trying to always stay ahead of, you know, those who may be against companies like ours, you know, and stay ahead of the curve, you know, to really lead this industry and show everyone which way to go. Because when we first got here in 2012, there was almost everyone was a reimbursement product. Mm-hmm. And then we came out and we didn't go that direction. Almost everyone was covering just guns. We came out and we covered all use of forces for life-threatening incidents. And, you know, we just kept changing the industry. And some of these companies did alter what they had. And we actually made the industry better, because when they changed, we don't have a problem with them changing, because it makes sure that, you know, gun owners are covered. And that's really the bottom line. You don't have to be a CCW Safe member. We want you to be covered. We want you to be covered, you know, rightly. So, I enjoy the fact that we stand forward as leaders in the industry.
And that's the beauty of capitalism and competition. Mm-hmm. You know, it's good for the consumer.
Absolutely. So, hey, I always like to go back, Michael.
Yes.
Think about the police department for a second. Go back in time. Name off who was one of your most significant leaders in that space? Who was your supervisor or somebody like that? That was it could be a sergeant.
Well, I tell you, one of the, and I had some good leadership at Oklahoma City, but when I was with ATF in Dallas, mm-hmm. the SAC down there was named Ronnie Carter.
Yeah,
and Ronnie Carter was a legendary SAC, or a legendary agent in ATF. He was a kick-ass agent. He was a kick-ass supervisor, and even as a RAC, he was. I remember one time they're trying to get new cars down there, and this is the kind of guy, and this is the kind of leader who I want. They're trying to get new cars, and they were like, yeah, you can't get, you know, weren't going to give them any new cars and so forth, and they had all these cars that needed too much work done, they weren't maintained, and So he worked out a deal locally, I believe in Dallas, to get those, like, I don't know, however many cars traded in for a few new cars. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're like, well, you can't do that. You can't do that. And I remember the story I heard was, you know, he's like, is it illegal? No. Is it unethical? No. Then I can do it. And, you know, just one of those that got stuff done. And I always looked up to him. He's the one that hired me. I always really looked up to him, not only because of that story, but a bunch of those types of stories and really like the history he had when he was an agent. But he was just an awesome guy. And like I said, I had other, you know, officers like that and lieutenants like that.
No. Before you go further, because SAC is such a funny word, tell us what that means. What does that mean?
Special agent in charge.
Thank you. Because there's some people that might not know what SAC is.
Yeah. And so you have in on the federal level, you have RACs, which are resident agent in charge. Mm-hmm. And then you have the SACs. And the RACs are over like the, like Dallas Field Division, you know, has North Texas, Oklahoma. And then we had El Paso thrown in there for with us. So the SAC is over all of those, that whole field division. And then within that field division, you have smaller divisions like Oklahoma City, Tulsa, you know, Dallas, Fort Worth. And then each one of those has a RAC.
Mm-hmm.
And so Ronnie was the SAC, he's kind of like the, you know, the police chief of the division. And typically one of the things that I have seen, and we talk about this all the time. We were just talking about this yesterday with Gary. You know, you see these, a lot of times you see a really good officer. Once they get up into major chief, police chief positions,
mm-hmm.
they change.
Yeah.
And most of the time it's not for the better. Now, I believe that this, I believe, you know, I've seen it in judo as well. I've seen, like, you know, judo coaches, like, I've seen awesome competitors, Olympic yeah. level guys, even world champion level guys, that come out and they're not like great coaches, or vice versa. You see guys who are amazing coaches that, you know, weren't like amazing athletes.
Yeah.
So I think that, and that's, I think that is really directly related to what we're talking about today, experience and leadership. Because if you don't have a strong base
mm-hmm.
in experience and leadership, and really I'm just looking at these, so I'm looking at commitment, experience, leadership, dedication, caring. If you don't have your core values as a person, as an individual, it's easy to get off track.
Mm-hmm.
Those core values are what keeps you on track. And very rarely, and that was to me what was so special about Ronnie was, you know, even as a SAC, he was still the guy he was when he was younger, when he was back kicking ass in the field.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, people, they might get too drunk on leadership.
Yes.
You know, and they become kind of off center. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, if you don't have those core values, and I really think this exercise that we did, is a good drill for families, for even for individuals, you know, to sit down and just really look at who you are and what you believe in. Because that's something that, you know, as we grow, I mean, we've grown immensely over the last 5 years, but mm-hmm. I really feel that, you know, we're still centered, you know.
Absolutely.
And it is a constant strive to do that when you get to higher and higher levels. But I think that's what I've seen in, you know, leaders who have gone up to a certain level and then they just get, you know, basically, I guess, just drunk on the power or whatever. Yeah. You know, I saw a deal one time, and I hate to even bring this up because Liam Neeson, I just, he can kiss my ass because what he came out and said. What he came out and said about the guns, you know, they're just too violent, but I don't mind making movies about them killing people.
Yeah, yeah.
But he actually had a really good quote, I think is one of the Star Wars movies. He was talking about power, his role, whatever character he's playing was, you know, power. And they're asking him, you know, how do you play that power? And he said, you know, he said, the most powerful downplay power.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is the one of the smart things he said in the past was that, because it really is. You know, the people who downplay power typically are the people who, you know, are those with power or leadership, whatever it is.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to challenge you today, Michael, to come up with a quote in the next podcast with somebody that you like, not somebody that you dislike. So find one for us.
Okay.
Yeah. I challenge you.
That should be easy. Oh, yeah, that's somebody easy. That I like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Not somebody that's against guns.
Well, I mean, I'm just, you know, you get these people.
He said one thing, right?
$1 million careers off of this. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, these guns are just, they're so violent. They don't need to be in our society. Well, take them out of your movie.
That's right. That's right.
I don't know if you could do a movie without him. I don't know. He's a pretty good actor.
He's all right.
He's no Louis Guzman.
No, he's not.
Come on
now. No. No. Hey, so I'm going to step back and I didn't give you my leader.
Yeah, I want to hear yours. All
right. So my leader, I actually have two. One, I'm going to go back to work and I'm going to say Bobby Tidwell.
Bobby Tidwell,
you know, he was awesome. Retired Marine, police officer, came up in a time where you really could be an officer. And he was a great leader. Always up front, you know, he was the first one to pull me into the impact unit, you know, the street crime unit when I was in the Hefner station. And, you know, I watched him because I adopted a lot of his leadership, abilities and skills, you know, as I moved forward and became a supervisor myself and had my own team. And the one thing that I really enjoyed about what he did was he handpicked everyone. He didn't allow the major to push, you know, just anyone upon him, because he wanted to have a team that he could, you know, depend on, one that he didn't have to be, you know, looking over his shoulder to find out what they're doing. Those who are going to have good character in the darkness as they would in the light, meaning, you know, without anybody watching them.
Right.
And I actually stole that from him. You know, when I created my own team, I went one step further, which was, it wasn't just someone that I identified. I put them on a 6-month probation so that if everyone in the team did not accept you, then I would ask you to leave as well, no matter if I liked you or not. So it wasn't just, you know, me, you know, being the ruler of this team. It was us as a cohesive unit. So I really stole that from, you know, Bobby Tidwell. And plus, you know, do you know he actually gave me my nickname Soup? Did you know that?
Oh yeah, he gave us all. He beat the crap out of us.
He beat the crap out of us.
That was one of the things. I was Darth.
Yeah. Okay. That's right.
Darth, and then I think it became Dark Man.
Yeah, that's right.
And he was awesome. He was one of the ones that, you know. And I was talking about this yesterday. Robert Bybee was another one of mine that I really learned a lot from on the account. And they were from the same kind of time, same kind of era.
Absolutely.
But yeah, Tidwell was awesome. Awesome leader. And it's kind of the same as Ronnie. He never lost that police officer's heart and mind and toughness.
Absolutely. And now my second, Mike, I'm gonna one up you. My second leader is my dad, and my dad, you know, at an early age, you know, he was a Marine. My dad is a chess master, and my dad also, he was a boxer. He was one of Muhammad Ali's sparring partners back in the 70s, and my dad early on taught me those two things, those two skills, which was how to play chess. He had me to the point at age six, I was playing college students and beating them. I was winning city competitions. And then also he taught us how to box. And in doing those two things, you know, there's a lot of discipline that goes with both, one in the mind and one physically. And, you know, those two things I actually carry with me, you know, in my life. You know, I play chess in life. I try to think four moves ahead. And that's kind of what makes me it's a perfect position for me to be, you know, COO, because that's what I have to do when I look at our competitors, look at the trends, you know, things are going against our company. And, you know, I keep my eye on everything. So it helps me to try to think ahead and to help make decisions with my other partners,
right?
You know, to make CCW safe, you know, to what it is. But shout out to my dad. Give my dad a shout.
Well, thanks for making me look like a total dick, man.
You know what?
I'll give a shout out to my dad too.
Hey, Dad. Too late. I won.
You won.
I won that one.
I'm gonna have to hide this one from my dad.
That's right. Don't let him see this one. No,
so
but
my dad boxed too, you know.
Oh, did I? Didn't know that.
Yeah, now, he was a minister, and
I knew he was boxed. A minister.
Yeah, and he boxed early on, and then kind of quit and went into the ministry. But yeah, man, my brothers. So I'm the youngest of six, four older brothers. They used to steal his boxing gloves and beat the crap out of me. My mom would take away the boxing gloves, and they would, you know, in the back in the day, on the sofas they had those little round pillows.
Yeah.
They would take those little round pillows and tape them on their hands and still beat me.
Mm-hmm.
So.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
It was fun.
Well, you can box now. I tell you what, those who are listening, Michael's been boxing for the past year and a half now, Mike.
Yeah, about a year and a half.
Give a shout out to Calvino, and yeah.
He's a great coach.
He really is, and I mean his, you know, I started because Mike's love is judo, and you know when we were coming up, I started him. You know, we started practicing with his hands, and they're not like they are now, and you now you know when you practice with Mike, I mean he really takes you out. He gave me a kidney punch one day, and I still don't appreciate him. I don't appreciate him for that. That's his third time in since we've known each other for 27 years that he's hurt me. He's pulled my shoulder out of the socket, and he's done all kinds of things to me, you know.
We don't need to go back to 1995, man.
It was 96. Yeah. It was 96. Yes.
I love boxing. I haven't been able to recently just with so much going on. I've been doing usually one or two a week, but, yeah, I miss it. Now I'm with heading out to Jackson Hole. I'm going to miss another – probably 2 weeks, so I'm gonna have to. I gotta take my jump rope and hit it while I'm in the mountains. I'll be hiking quite a bit, so yeah, I'll get some exercise.
Absolutely.
Hopefully, I won't have to box a bear while I'm up there. Man, they had a big bear attack. They had two bears attack. I think two hunters and a guide up there, and I think they just found the guide a couple days ago.
Did you just say box a bear?
Yeah, I wouldn't box a bear.
Yeah, don't do that.
And then they also had an elk that trampled a guy. So I have to keep my one eye open. Good up there. I don't think we told that story. That's for another story.
Yeah.
Another podcast.
That's another podcast. We'll tell that story. You know what? Well, hey, yes, sir.
Go ahead.
No,
go ahead.
It sounds like we're about to jump off. Go.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to tell you know just one you know quick story of me being a supervisor with Oklahoma City, and you know the guys that myself and Michael presented to you a little while ago, I was that supervisor, and you know I'm going to actually tell two quick stories, one in which you know gained me a lot of I don't want to say respect with the troops, but you know, I was always one that would be there with them, for one. There was one year, I think, was it the 95 State Fair, Michael, that went crazy where everybody was shooting and somebody got their throat cut? Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
So it was a real wild State Fair. And I think that was the first year that the powers that be did not want us to kick out gang members. And so we had to allow them in. We couldn't kick them out for just wearing their colors. Yeah. And because they wanted their money. I can say that now. And right around 10 o'clock, it never fails. The fights start in the middle of the midway. And there's always 70 officers there, about 70, 75 officers. It was about 700 gang members. Mm-hmm. And the fight started, shooting started, everyone's everywhere, you know, running around. My group got, you know, they ran after one guy with a gun. So I had three guys from my group and five others. And I had two of the chief of police, they were there as well. So we put them, I assigned somebody to protect them, and I told the other ones to huddle up. And I said, listen, you know, because they were saying there was about 70 gang members coming around our direction. So I told everybody to huddle up, pull out their nightsticks. And I said, okay, listen, you're not going to be able to shoot into this crowd. I said, you're probably going to deal with about maybe 20 that are really committed. If we get overrun, I said, you stay together, you go back to back. I said, and if we get overrun, all I want you to do is you take your stick, you hit him right in the middle of the head, you split their head. I want one hit, one kill, right? So they all looked at me. They said, what did you just say? I said, you heard me. One hit, one kill. I said, we're not playing. I said, if you kill the first 10, nobody else is going to bother you, right? So they were like, they said, okay, this guy's crazy. Now, cut to a few months later, some guys that actually knew that story. There was a guy up north that was going crazy on PCP. He was up on the second story apartment, and it was one of those. You remember, you know the complexes where when you open up the door at the bottom, there's like it's a death funnel, right? Mm-hmm. And they can see you, and they got a little half wall up there, and you have about 20 steps to get to the top. So when I get there, I mean, this guy's going crazy. There's stuff all in the middle. He has ripped off the cabinets out of the kitchen. He's throwing the cabinets, the microwave, everything's coming out of the patio door. He's already shattered that, and furniture's coming out. He's by himself. So he threw a couch up there. He threw it out the window, and so this is what I see when I'm driving up. So the officers see me and they start smiling like, yeah, you know, Soup's gonna let us go up there and get him. So the young lady, the officers come over, tell me what's going on. He's on PCP. He's been doing this for the past 30 minutes. And he's up there and he says, come on up and get me. I'm going to kill you. He keeps telling the officers, you know, taunting them. And he has a knife up there and he's like, I'm going to kill you. Come on up here, right? And I go, I look at the girl and I say, hey, do you have somewhere you can go? And she said, what do you mean? She said, that's my apartment. It doesn't belong to him. I said, but do you have somewhere to go tonight? And she said, yes. I said, go there. I said, I'm not sending my officers up there. We're going to sit out here and let him calm down and come off the drug. And of course, she was upset because I didn't do anything. But more so than anything, the officers were upset. They said, yeah, you know, that's not the type of thing that I would do. And I said, no, you have to understand, you need to realize when not to put a person in a position to take somebody else's life. Because if one of those officers go up there and get stabbed to death, I'm going to have to talk to his wife. If you send us up there to save your couch and your refrigerator and they go up there and kill your boyfriend, you're going to have a problem with me the next day, lady. So we're not going up there. And that's a true leader right there. Not just someone that's willing to kill someone, but someone is willing to not take a life as well and de-escalate. That's why I wanted to finish.
Yeah, you got to know when the fight is a fight and when it's just a battle.
Absolutely. But
yeah, we got shot at it that
that was year. So crazy.
Because when I was in the gang unit, we took a bunch out one. We had to split them all up. We took a whole big group out, and we had to walk them all the way out. And then the other guys who had gotten out already came by and did a drive-by on us. And
yeah, I was really surprised that none of us got hurt on that one, but I think there was at least one guy that died. He got his throat cut. Mm-hmm. So at least one death, and thank God most gang members don't know how to shoot well. But there was a lot of shootings, but nobody got killed. But that's it, Michael. I think we can wrap this up.
Good. Well, Stan, great to talk to you again. I had a great time in LA last week.
Really appreciate you.
And maybe, you know, we got a bunch of members out there. Maybe we can start doing some meetups in some different cities.
Oh, that's a great idea.
We maybe sponsor something where people can come out and we can get to know. Because it's kind of cool meeting some of our members. We've both been out before.
Yes.
Places where we meet people who are members of ours, and it's kind of cool.
Yeah, we met some in D.C.
Meet them and talk to them. Yeah, in D.C. Yeah. was really
for
cool.
Police week.
A lot of those were, retired officers.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. Well, we're gonna have next up is probably gonna be either Don West or Bob O'Connor. Both of them great interviews. So I think that's it.
All right.
Stan, take care, brother.
All right. See you next time. Right. You guys be safe out there.